have really intimate knowledge, and I'll be honest, hockey, I was,
yeah,
I mean, historically bad at. I mean, it was, like, embarrassingly bad. In my defense, I told them in my interview I had never covered hockey before.
Yeah.
I'd never seen an NHL game before. The first NHL game I went to was, like, at my interview. They took me to one, and I was like, oh, this is really fun. You know, I grew up in Wisconsin. We didn't have, and my parents weren't big hockey fans. It's not like we drove down to Chicago to go to Blackhawks games.
No.
So I really wasn't into it, and they hired me anyway, and I was terrible at it. But I worked hard, and I spent my whole summer between my first season and my second season, like, reading the hockey news and watching hockey games and watching things online. And I remember a player, Steve McKenna, came up to me in my second season and said, pulled me aside and said, we can tell you worked really hard to learn this sport. We appreciate it. It meant a lot to me. You know, I still wasn't an expert by any means, but I no longer was asking, like, the worst questions on the planet.
Yeah. It doesn't mean, yeah,
the learning curve.
Hockey is tough. Hockey's really tough.
Yeah, and people who watch hockey are really into it. People who are fans are diehard hockey fans. And it was, I mean, there were times where I would literally be in my hotel room having, like, minor panic attacks.
Yep.
Because I was so nervous and I was so scared. I was just so uncomfortable in the sport. It was, I mean, I would be, like, crying in my room. Like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this game because I'm, like, have to read this graphic and I don't even know what any of this stuff means. Like, I'm having a hard time grasping it because I'm trying to learn so much so fast. But, you know, I wasn't all that terrible because I ended up working in that market for 5 years. So they kept me around.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh is a big sports town. So, I mean, that's very commendable.
Oh, yeah. And they were like, no. I mean, there was one woman who wrote for the Post-Gazette.
Yeah.
For the Tribune. Yeah, so she wrote for the Tribune. Karen Price.
Yeah.
She covered hockey. And then trying to think if there were any other than Jennifer Langosch, who covered the Pirates for a short time towards the end of my tenure, I don't think there were any other female sports reporters.
I don't recall.
So not only are you kind of like a sports crazy town, a town with two newspapers, a regional, I was one of like three women.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't remember anyone from my time there at all. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how much has changed in such a short period of time, the landscape and the personnel. What do you think why do you think that is? Why the influx of women?
I think more women now see it, like, you know, unlike, you know, you and I, who grew up with very few people to turn on a TV or open a sports page and see a byline from a woman, you know. You know, now you go on social media or you turn on ESPN or you turn on a football game or a basketball game and there's women everywhere. So I think it's like anything that, you know, if you're a little girl sitting at home and you're really into the hockey game and you see Katherine Tappan hosting, you know, the pregame show for NBC, you go, oh, I want to be like Katherine Tappan, right? You know, I love hockey. Sure. I could do this. So I think that has changed it, where now it's not seen as, you know, trailblazing to go into it. I think that, you know, let's be honest, there is, especially on the television side, there are a lot of male executives.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're still hiring females because they think, oh, well, they'd like to watch her on TV.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
So I think that's an issue. I think that the biggest issue now that we're facing is how we use women.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, sports talk radio is almost devoid of any female voices.
They're completely.
You even look at some of the roles that females have, you know. Like you watch Molly Karam on Mike and Mike when she, you know, that like hour that she's on. And Molly's really smart and really good at what she does and she holds down first pick. But let's be honest, when she's on Mike and Mike, it's, guys, who had the best fashion last night at the, at the NBA game?
Right.
Or, you know, it's Valentine's Day. What are you going to get your wife? Like, it's sort of kitschy stuff.
Yeah, it's really dumbed down and it's not... It's not like there's capability for more there, more substance, and it's just not happening.
Right.
So, and it's...
At least not on a high-powered, like, you know, you do have the trifecta of Kate Sagan, Kate McManus, and, you know, Sarah Spain, who have the Saturday ESPN radio show. Michelle Beadle and Ramona Shelburne have the Sunday, but let's be honest, they're on Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon. That's not exactly a prime-time radio spot. And, you know, I'll be honest, you can't tell me that any of those women aren't fully capable of being on a Monday through Friday
drive time
prime time drive time show and holding their own.
Absolutely.
You know, intelligent, opinionated women.
The afternoons, in this area for radio are just, I don't know. I mean, what they're putting on. So, I mean, like, just try it out. See what happens. What's the hurt? I think what I like about CSN, and I've been watching a ton of it, Jared Carabas is on there. They're trying those different things and seeing if they stick and trying, you know, women and trying, people that may have come up into sports media in a different way. So I have a lot of respect for it. Plus it's just a little bit more entertaining to watch, quite frankly, than some of the other channels.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, we definitely push the envelope a little bit.
You do.
But that's what I like about it. I think part of the reason they hired me is because I did have some radio background. I had done pretty extensive radio. I had a show in Milwaukee before I moved here. And even prior to that, I had done a lot of radio in Pittsburgh and filled in on a lot of radio the last, you know, few years of my career. So I think they liked that was part of the image that hired me.
What finally brought you here? Did you come here in 2007, or did you make another stop?
No, I came here in 2012. So, 2007, I actually left Pittsburgh and moved back to Milwaukee and took a similar job that I had in Pittsburgh in Milwaukee with the Brewers. I became their pregame and postgame reporter.
Yep.
And I loved it. It was so fun. It was 2008 baseball season, and I'm a huge Brewers fan. It was the first time they had gone to the postseason, 1982, when I was just 5 years old.
Yeah.
So it was like a dream come true.
Nice.
And then after that season, I actually was offered a job at MLB Network.
Okay.
So I moved to New York, and I worked at MLB Network from 2008 to 2010. And then after that, I actually took time off. It was a really, and I've talked pretty openly about this, but I struggle with anxiety and depression, and I had a pretty bad episode while living in New York, and just struggled with a lot of things, and left the network and took some time off. I went to India. I volunteered. I taught English, was going to get into nonprofit work.
Wow. We have such a similar story. Scary.
It was like a tough time, and I just was so burnt out for the business, you know, and just constantly being under scrutiny and your appearance and, you know, like your social life is hard and your personal life is hard. And, I took some time off and came back from India and was like waiting tables. My friend was a general manager at a restaurant, so I was like waiting at people, and they'd be like, you know what you remind me of? You're just like that girl Trenny who was on the Brewers broadcast. And I was like, I am her.
Oh, God.
And they'd be like, why are you serving me a burger and fries with a Nick? And it was a humbling experience, you know, to go from, you know, making a pretty good salary working in New York City, Major League Baseball Network. I mean, it's not, you know, NBC's not Bob Costas or anything, but it was still, pretty high.
Substantial.
And then I'm, you know, and making Bloody Marys behind the bar.
Yeah.
But it was just what I needed to do at that time. Yeah. That was just what was best for me. And you know, I appreciate my best friends helping me out and becoming my roommate so I could keep my apartment in Milwaukee. And
sometimes you have to follow your heart and your mind, you know? And it's a hard thing to do. It takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, it is a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to, like, know when to step away from something, know when to push through with something, and, you know, when it's worth it.
Yep.
And like I said, I was going to get out of the business altogether, and then I was actually interviewing for a position with a nonprofit when I got a call in that interview from a WTMJ, which is like the it's a radio, it's a news talk radio station in Wisconsin, but they're the flagship of the Packers, Brewers, Boston, Badgers.
Okay.
And they were revamping their entire sports department. And they said, we're interested in bringing you on as a radio talk show host. If you're interested, give us a call. And I was like, huh, that's kind of serendipitous. So I went and met with them, and I just decided that that was, for me, that was something I wanted to try. So I did that from 2010 to, like, spring of 2011 until about summer of 2012, so about 18 months. They also had a TV station in the same building, so I would do TV. I kept up with TV, and through that, I would do some things for NBC Sports Network.
Nice.
My agent would get me a couple freelance things where I would just do live shots for them or help them out with something. My agent called in June of 2012 and said, hey, you know, the CSN in Boston has a couple of openings coming up. They're looking to fill. They want to know if you want to come out and audition. And I said, for whatever reason on that day, I said, you know, I'll go. I really liked Boston. I've run the marathon there. So it kind of felt sort of homey to me. I'll check it out.
Sure.
And kind of really no intention of, like, necessarily taking the job.
You're right.
And I did. And I came here and it just felt right. Like, I loved everybody. I loved the feeling of the newsroom. I liked the way that, you know, the people were friendly. And it seemed like everyone thoroughly enjoyed working there.
Yeah.
I liked sort of their concept. And so I took the job and I moved here in September of 2012.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when you let go, and I think so much comes to you. So it seemed that CSN was that way with you. It's amazing. Wow, that's quite the story. Very cool. Very cool. So right now you're just for purposes of the interview, your shows are what that you're on right now.
Like, the main shows I'm on are Sportsnet Central, which I work on. I work at Sportsnet Central Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay.
At 6 and 10:30, but either anchor or I'm at the ballpark, depending on what my assignment is. Like, tonight I'm anchoring the 10:30.
Okay.
Happy July. It's, like, my least favorite shift.
I know, that's late. Oh, God bless you.
Because you're at work until midnight. Tomorrow, there's a doctor on the West Coast, so I can be at work till, like, 2 in the morning. On Sunday, I'm on the baseball show from 6:30 to 8:00. And then on Thursdays, I'm on Early Edition at 6:30 with Gary Changway.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think that's where I've seen you on the baseball show. So, I watch that quite a bit. And then I'll, you know, if I can get the, you know, get in whatever else, the sports desk and things like that. So, I get to it. Sometimes I'm not home all the time with work and whatnot. Trying to do this and trying to work at the same time is its own beast.
Oh, I can't even imagine. You're such a passion for it. Because I come home from work, all I want to do is watch TV.
Right.
Not do anything.
You really have to self-motivate in such an incredible way. In the future, do you hope to stay with us or at CSN, or do you hope to... Or do you hope to move on to something bigger? What do you see for your next 5 years?
You know, I actually really like it here.
Yeah.
I like living here. I like where I work. I like that I get to do a lot of opinion stuff. And we're kind of shifting to where even our new shows have sort of a undertone of more of that opinion as opposed to just straight news. You know, I always say I would never say never, because I said when I went to Milwaukee, like, never moving again, I'm staying home, my family's here, this is where I'm going to be, and now I'm in Boston, and I'm like, I can't ever imagine moving back to the Midwest, like, I love it so much here.
Right.
You know, again, it would just kind of depend what opportunity came up, like, you know, if, like, I'm going to Rio, for the Olympics, I'm going to be covering tennis.
Oh, wow.
And,
if
I, you know, if I go to Rio, and somebody from NBC is like, wow, we really like her. We're going to bring her on. We're going to move you. We're going to make you part of NBC Sports, and we're going to loop you in on, like, you have things on the Today Show and spots on MSNBC. I'm not sure if I'm going to be like, well, I don't know. I mean, that's probably something I would, you know, move for. But I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't move for just anything. And I've made that actually probably maybe too abundantly clear. Like, you know, I've had to talk to the ESPN about positions, and I'm not willing anymore just to go. If that makes sense. Like, it needs to be for something that I feel like I'm going to be passionate about, and it's also going to allow me to sort of, like, speak my mind and fight for things that I believe in, like equality for women, you know, better mental health coverage and, like, destigmatizing mental health. I mean, it has to be something where they're going to allow me to kind of balance both of those passions, which,
really have,
you know,
some ownership,
social justice and things like that, along with what I do.
Yeah, really having that ownership of what you're doing and creating and reporting on is hard to find.
And I've somehow managed to find it.
Yeah, you certainly have. So, with regard to Rio, how are you feeling about going down there, given the not so great press about the infrastructure and the water and the Zika?
Article today in the Boston Globe.
Not yet.
About how people are getting, like, held at gunpoint, like, knife point robbed and stuff. I went to Sochi also.
You did.
Which obviously had a lot around it too.
It
being on the border of Georgia and, you know, the Caucasus Mountains and terrorism. And, you know, what I learned there is that when the Olympics happen, they really take every single precaution.
Yeah.
And I've traveled a lot, and I've traveled to places that most people probably aren't on the top of their list. You know, I spent almost a month in India, and then New Delhi and Northern India area. In February, went to Istanbul.
Wow.
So I feel like I'm a fairly savvy traveler.
Sure.
And, you know, pretty vigilant traveler. So I, you know, I feel like I know what precautions to take, who to listen to. And I just feel like it's an opportunity I can't pass up. I mean, to be a part of NBC's Olympic coverage is such an honor.
Yes.
I mean, you know, to get that call, like, I thought maybe I would hesitate and be like, well, what about Zika? And the minute they said, do you want to go? I was like, absolutely yes. And then I was like, oh, but what about Zika?
Yeah.
Here now, it's going to affect the adult brain too. But I feel like you know, when I went to India, I had to take malaria pills and get, like, you know, 10 new immunizations. And I feel like I like travel. I like adventurous travel, and I'm not gonna let it stop me.
No. Will it be women's and men's tennis?
To be honest, they haven't, like, made. I mean, we've made the announcement at work who's going, so it's not like it's a secret. But they haven't announced broadcast teams, and I actually haven't even gotten, like, my full travel yet or my production packet. So we're really still in the early sort of stages, I think. They just finished, you know, I'm sure you just saw over the weekend, NBC had the French Open.
Yes.
And I guess there's a lot of the people that I'll be working with were working on the French Open.
Yes.
So I would guess between now and before Wimbledon starts, my guess is I'll start, you know, having conference calls with my producers and figure out who's on my team and what my exact role will be.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'll be a reporter. I'll be in the mix zone to get, you know, post-match interviews and things like that, but I'm not sure beyond that exactly what my duty will be.
Well,
I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm watching a lot more tennis than I ever thought I would watch.
Well, as a tennis player, I'm quite jealous.
Well, now that I know that, I may have to tap into your knowledge.
Well, I'd be more than happy to help. I have my tennis magazine. Make sure you grab those and just get all the last few back issues. Especially this last one with the French Open preview. They do great reporting. The people you're going to be working with are top notch. The McEnroe brothers, who, you know, sometimes they'll have.
Hello.
Yeah, they'll have. Just trying to think of who else is in there. I can't really think. Maybe Austin. Can't think of her first name. They're all, like, well seasoned in the sport, so you should be just fine. No problem. Please do contact me. I did enjoy the finals, so, but I hope that people don't pull out. That's what I'm worried about, is that
I know
because of the slam, because it's right during the Grand Slam, season, so right. That, you know, is going to affect the people have
Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. Yeah. So.
And Serena was hurting this week, so or when she played her final, so I was a little concerned. So we'll see what happens. But that said, there'll be great players either way, whether they're big name stars or they're not. I mean, it's amazing how many people are really quite good and are not known names, but that is the case with all of sports. So I wish you good luck. That's very exciting.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm really excited.
So any hot takes on specifically on the Swinehart getting injured, him not being so much of a possibly not going to be too much of a trade? Could it affect his trade value? What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know if there's anything more than what John said after the game yesterday where it was a severe ankle sprain, but they say oftentimes that an ankle sprain is worse than a break because it can take so long to heal. I mean, I'm sure you saw the replays as I did too. I mean, that thing bent in ways I don't think someone's ankle is supposed to bend.
No, that was brutal to watch.
It does hurt them a little bit because you have Christian Vasquez, so this is a piece that you could move and feel comfortable that you're not giving up so much. You know, Brock Holt will obviously come back from his from his concussion at some point. Plus, you have Bruce Castillo that's, you know, now called up because it's Swinehart. You have some depth, maybe not great depth, but you have depth at those positions.
Yeah.
Although now with Ryan Hannigan hurt too, they're definitely a little thin at catcher. But I feel like he's a piece that if a team was looking for help, say like right now,
right.
Would be somebody that you could trade away. But with that said, they do have a lot of pieces. Their positional depth is really good in the minors, and I think you could part with some players and still be okay, particularly because of the youth that you have with Travis Shaw, Xander Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr. I mean, all those guys are 26 or younger.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a logjam there anyway.
Yes.
Then I think you can part with some depth to get some starting pitching and some relief help. The question is, who's going to be available to go after?
Yeah, and that really is the problem. There is, like, hardly any, there really is not anyone out there. So, you know, initially I was like, okay, well, maybe, you know, maybe we go bullpen and we build that up and we, you know, just kind of grind it out. Kind of go in the mold of Kansas City and see if we can make a go at this with our offense the way it is. But I don't know. After the last few starts, it's been hard to go with that line of thought any further. So we really do need someone, but then there's really no one available.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see like maybe what Oakland is willing to part with.
Yeah,
they're obviously not going anywhere.
No.
I was reading a Nick Affardo, baseball notes yesterday. He had, you know, he threw out a bunch of different names. Atlanta might be willing to part with guys. They're still, I think, a few years away. San Diego actually has some people. They're still a few years away. I mean, they got rid of James Shields, but they also have Drew Pomeranz.
Yeah, that was...
Because Sonny Gray is hurt, you might be able to get Sonny Gray. For less than you did before, and he might be able to just kind of be rejuvenated here. I'm not sure. So there are possibilities, but the Sox are going to have to give stuff up to get things in return for sure.
Yeah. And it's going to be, you know, and I think we should be willing to move the farm. I don't know how you feel about that. Some of the pieces, especially at AA, could be useful. With one of our extra position players. What do you think?
Yeah, I just feel like the one thing they have not done well is develop pitching in their own farm system. So you have really no choice but to either trade for pitching or sign it via free agency, and you're obviously going to then pay a ton of money for it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a lot easier to replace, like, an Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Than it is to find a Chris Sale.
Yes.
I think those like find or not that they're going to get Chris Sale. Obviously, the White Sox have made it clear that they're sort of in it to win it, or at least try to be in contention in the Central. with the James Shields thing, but you know, it's not easy to find good young pitching, and you're going to definitely have to give up some pretty big names that'll be tough to swallow. But if you can get a guy, if they can get a guy too that they can have under their control for a while,
yes,
then it probably makes it less difficult to handle.
Yeah, and they really have. You make a great point. They really have not been able to develop the pitching, you know, at the farm level. And I mean, you had guys. I mean, 2011, I think we took on Anthony Renato. He turned out to be a bit of a bust. Brian Johnson. He's, you know, we're trying to work with him. Yeah, there's a lot of names that just haven't panned out. You know, we went.
Henry Owens.
Yeah, right. It's just unfortunate.
He can pitch at AAA, but he gets up here and he's walking guys left and right.
Right. Yeah.
Control issues, and like, you know, it might just be something where because Henry's such a big guy that maybe. But you know, I feel like they keep getting these guys who's like between the ears. Not that their stuff's not good, but they just sort of can't put it all together.
Right. Yeah. This guy has this problem. This guy has Joe Kelly throws it too hard, but has no command, and then this guy's throwing too slow, but he has the command, and it's just like, the mix isn't in. It's frustrating. It becomes even more frustrating when they're hitting. So,
when you're averaging like 8.5 runs per game, you're still losing.
Right, which is astronomical, complete 180 from where we were last year. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Any conversation or feelings about the Patriots? I know most of the recent news is all Deflategate, but anything else that you feel that you have any positive opinions on for the coming year?
I mean, I think they have a chance, even if Brady sits, I think they still, you know, are the favorites to win the East. But as someone who is the same age as Tom Brady, I will say that, you know, I hope the Patriots aren't in win-now mode, because it's only natural. At some point, there's going to be a decline.
Yeah.
And I feel like that window each year closes a little more and a little more. Maybe not as much as it has with other quarterbacks in the past, but I mean, you know, nobody can outrun Father Time. So, you know, I look at this year as an important one, especially because I think they'll have 13 free agents after this year. So this team could have an entirely new complexion. You know, and obviously the three big names that are on that list are Jamie Collins, Dante Hightower, and Malcolm Butler. Butler's a restricted free agent, so it's a little bit different, but you know, you could have things looking completely different a year from now, and sort of having to start from scratch with new guys. I feel like this should be a big year for them, and maybe, I don't want to say their last chance, I don't feel like they're ever their last chance, as long as Brady and Belichick are there, but this is a big opportunity to do what they didn't do last year.
Guys, wow, yeah, that's true. That's very true. Didn't realize the 13 free agents. I did not realize that. So
I think that's the number. We've been talking about it, at, you know, around the office and chatting, and I'm pretty sure that number sticks out in my head for a reason. I'm pretty sure 13 free agents will come up after this season.
Yeah, that's a lot. Thank you so much for your time. Any parting words of advice for those of us who are either looking to work our way into sports media from another position or from another work area in life, or for someone who's in college?
For someone who's in college, I'll start there. It's a little bit easier. Get internships and get internships early and keep yourself open to, you know, doing what a lot of us do, which is taking that job that doesn't pay very much, that first job, whether it's for a newspaper or a website or a television station and really, like, refining your skills and your craft at a lower level where there aren't as many eyes on it, and then sort of watch your career grow from there. I mean, I feel like a lot of people give up, especially people who want to maybe be a producer or a on-air talent, rather than going somewhere smaller first and sort of honing their craft. They settle for something else because they just don't want to leave a major market. And I would say, you know, take that leap of going somewhere small and refining your craft, getting better at it. Because then when you do get to that bigger market, it's not going to be as overwhelming, and you will have made your mistakes somewhere else. As for people who are in another business trying to get in,
yes,
I would say kind of the same thing. I mean, put yourself out there, writing and sending things everywhere, and if you get an offer, even if it's scary and it seems like it's maybe far away from where you're from, or something that maybe isn't going to pay as much as you're making in your current job, I mean, if you can do it, you know, to sacrifice that for that opportunity, because sometimes you kind of have to take a step back before you can take that step forward.
Yep. Well, thank you so much. That's all so helpful to all of us. Thank you so much for your time. I very much appreciate it. It's great to hear such a full and diversified story as yours is. And it seems like you found a very happy home here in Boston. And I hope that is, I hope we have, as a city, helped you with all of the things that you struggle with as well. So, because I know I definitely pull from and find my strength from this city and all that it has to offer me. So,
yeah, it is a great place. People look at this and see a bunch of angry New Englanders, but I actually really like their people here. Mm-hmm. I think there are good people here.
Very, very good people, very good resources. So we're happy to have you, and I look forward to watching more of you on CSN.
Thanks, Tara. I appreciate it. Let me know when it posts, and I will
for sure. Absolutely.